Creative Babble.
Hey everyone, I'm about to go on a much needed vacation, and I didn't want to rush the next episode because it's really good. So I decided to drop a bonus show for you to feast on. It's a series of interviews about pretend radio. A lot of you always ask me, how do I get my story ideas? How do I find the people who I interview? So I thought you might find these interviews interesting. The first interview I would like for you to listen to is my conversation with Aaron from the Generation Y podcast. It was a huge honor to be featured on their show. For those of you who don't know, Generation Y is kind of a big deal. They're currently top 50 on iTunes as of this recording. Aaron wanted to know more about the reporter who shot and killed the TV crew live on television. Here's a little bit of the interview.
Now, you said your show is about people who pretend to be someone else, and quite often this is at the expense of people who don't know they're pretending. They're hiding a secret.
Right. Yeah. You know, unfortunately, so sometimes I'm interviewing the victim and sometimes I'm interviewing the con artist. A lot of people, I think we all kind of, to a certain degree, live a lie. There's this concept called imposter syndrome, where, you know, some people feel like they're not really good enough at whatever they're doing. That's a form of pretending, right? But then you got people who are genuinely trying to take advantage of somebody and they're disguising their motivations. And I feel like, you know, trying to tell those kind of stories, it's helpful so that people could possibly avoid being conned or scammed, you know? So it's trying to explain that psychology of what motivates people and how do you know when somebody's like being upfront with you?
Yeah. And that's just that we don't know. Even the person who's next to you, sometimes you don't know if they're pretending at some point about something or if they're pretending about everything.
No, it's awesome too, because like, you know, we talk about like pretend as if it's a bad thing, but I'll give you an example of a good pretend story that I've done. I interviewed an undercover FBI agent, and this is a man who has to pretend as a career, you know what I mean? Like he's pretending and he's the good guy and he's pretending in situations that are life-threatening, you know? So trying to tell those stories are really fascinating. Like trying to get behind the scenes of what those people are thinking.
So that's an example of someone pretending for good, but we usually hear the story of what happens when someone's pretending for bad. And Your latest episode, which I think is it episode 16?
Yeah, it's episode 16 of season 2.
On Pretend Radio.
Yeah, it's called The Reporter. The Reporter is the story of, I'll kind of spoil it for you guys, but it's a story of one of my former coworkers. It's when I was a photojournalist in Greenville, North Carolina. It was like my first news job. And as a photojournalist, my job was to sit in a car all day with a reporter and we would go chase stories. I mean, this is what we did every day. You know, I would like to say it was 8 hours a day, but it was more like 12, 15 hours a day. We were, you know, kind of two people formed into one. You know, we were always together. And this reporter that I worked with, come to find out, you know, it was actually 8 or 10 years after we worked together, killed a news crew live on camera. And many of your listeners probably remember this day. It was about 2 years ago, and it was horrifying. It was horrifying for me. And the worst part was that when I first heard the news, I didn't even know who the killer was. You know, I didn't recognize the name.
And that's because the news was reporting the perpetrator as Bryce Williams.
Exactly. So when I heard that name, Bryce Williams, killed, you know, a reporter and a cameraman during the morning news, it didn't really ring a bell. And that's because Bryce Williams wasn't the killer's real name. It was Vester Flanagan. It was Vester, the reporter I worked with for many years. And so not only did that news have a chilling effect on me, just like it did everybody else who heard that news, but then it was that double whammy of finding out that, no, this guy, it was actually Vester. This guy was my reporter. And we weren't like the best of buddies. So like, you know, all of a sudden I start looking in and thinking back, I was like, could that have been me? I mean, you know, he obviously was a disgruntled employee that went after his coworkers. And then I started looking back, did I ever do anything to make him upset? You know, and it was very upsetting. I think I had to leave work that day. It was that bad. I just couldn't do anything. I was shutting down.
They did warn another of his former coworkers, right? That he was on the loose and hadn't been apprehended yet.
Yeah, because the moment they discovered, because you see, when he shot the camera crew, he started walking towards the camera, and they caught a glimpse of him, and it was a really blurry shot. And I couldn't, even when I saw the news in the morning and I saw that shot, I couldn't make out that it was Vester. But I guess upon further examination, the station figured it out. And when they figured that out, police called, a reporter that he was having trouble with. I mean, even when I worked with him, he had trouble with people that we work together. So I'm sure they just alerted everyone and anyone that could have had a conflict with him.
And that's where, when he was loose and you knew it was him, you kind of wondered, hey, what if I'm on the list?
Well, I mean, not really. I didn't feel like my life was in danger because it was happening. I was in North Carolina. He was in Virginia when it happened. So I didn't feel like I was, that never crossed my mind, that I was in an immediate danger. But I did think of like, man, what if he did snap while we were working together? Because he described himself, after researching this and reading his manifesto, he described himself as a powder keg just waiting to explode. So he's been building this anger for years, right? Like this just didn't, he didn't just wake up one morning and decide to do this. This is a man that even while we worked together, he was building this anger, and it was just building and building. And it, fortunately for me, it happened years later, but unfortunately for that news crew, you know, they paid the price, right? And like the whole angle of my story is, what did I miss? Because honestly, I did not see that coming. I mean, I could point out flaws in his character, but I would have never seen that coming. And in fact, there have been other people in my life who I would have suspected something like that, who have never committed a crime like that, but Vester did. And so why did he do it? And why didn't I see it? You know?
Well, before we started recording, we had a conversation about when people pretend, you don't know what's going on with them. Not really. Mm-hmm. And if someone has anger building up and they're hiding it, then you don't know about it. Our perceptions rule the day. We have this idea that, oh, well, so-and-so might do something like that, but this guy over here, I don't think so. But yeah, we could very well be wrong.
Yeah. So Vester was a African-American gay man. Okay. And I think, you know, I never saw anybody discriminate against him, but there were, even when we worked together, instances where he felt like maybe his race was an issue with some people or his sexuality. And even though I didn't perceive that to be discrimination in his head, you know, talking to the counselor who I interviewed in the story, is like these people who hold these grievances, they change the moral math so that they could justify their anger, you know? And so a situation that might come across as normal or non-memorable to most people, they could flip that in their head and make that an issue, right? And then it just builds and builds. And I think that's what really happened with Vester.
Was there no avenue for him to file a complaint to, you know, if there was racism against him? Did he feel like there wasn't that avenue available to him?
Yeah. I mean, looking back now, just reporting it as a journalist and as a podcaster, I realized that throughout his career, even when we worked together, he's filed many HR complaints. He's sued stations for racial discriminations. He's sued you know, he's had altercations with other journalists or reporters in the newsroom about his, you know, sexuality. And like he was very confrontational. He would either confront it himself or he would take it up, you know, to HR or in the courts. So I guess he felt that maybe the system failed him, you know.
Perception seems to rule all. And if you have attempted to work within the system, no matter what anyone else thinks, if you feel like you're being wronged and no one's doing anything about it, mm-hmm. that's anger.
And, you know, to me, he was never violent, but I guess, you know, looking back at his past, and I didn't learn this until much later, you know, when I was investigating this, that he actually had a violent past. And that's usually an indicator for this kind of behavior, you know. So like if you come from a violent past, it's easy to cross that bridge, you know. And his mother was very abusive. She threatened to kill his dad. His father, who was actually, I didn't mention this in the show, but his father was an NFL player, big guy. And he filed for a restraining order against his wife because she sounded like she wasn't well wrapped. Investors saw all this.
So when it comes to pretending and you're looking at Vester Flanagan, what do you think he was pretending?
I used my show as a way to really gather my thoughts about this, because this is a topic that I haven't really talked much about, not with my coworkers or anybody else. So I wanted to use this opportunity to express myself, right? And the pretend angle here is that Vester was living under this persona called Bryce Williams. He formed this persona. It was his news persona. And actually, that's not very uncommon in news. A lot of people go by different names, you know, just because it sounds better. But for me, that was the first layer of the pretend angle. The other pretend angle was that, gosh, I worked with this guy every day. I had no idea. You know, so like in a way, he was pretending to fit in, right? Where if I would have looked a little closer, I would have realized that he didn't have like furniture in his apartment when we lived in the same city. And then come to find out when after this whole horrific scene was over and they went to his apartment, he still had very little furniture. It was very like unkept and rotten food and just pictures of himself posted on the wall. I mean, there were like signs, right? So like the pretend angle there is that we're only seeing the veneer as society, as coworkers, we're only seeing veneer of people. And when you look closer, you know, we're living a different life, you know, but some people are living it in much more extreme ways than others. So, you know, interesting. I did not finish the script when I wrote this episode. Because I didn't know how to end it. And I usually write every word on my episodes, and I just couldn't finish this one. And so I sat in front of the microphone and I improvised the ending. It's like, you know what? I have no scientific proof of this, but maybe if we're just kind to each other, I mean, it sounds like such a cop-out, but maybe if we're just nice to each other and take the time to get to know somebody, even if they seem weird or withdrawn or just not like you or whatever, let's be nice, you know? And maybe that kindness, and I feel like during our time that we worked together, several of us expressed that kind of kindness. And I wonder if that's why that time period in his life was a positive time in his life when we worked together. And, you know, it's so easy to be dismissive of people. And I know it seems like a cop-out way of ending it, but that's all I could come up with. You know, at the end of the day, there's really no sign of what to look for because I miss them all. Right. And even when you talk to the professionals, they'll give you the signs, but just because you have hold grievances doesn't mean you're going to be a serial killer or a psychopath or a mass murderer. But if we're nice to each other, you know, that's just the least we could do. Right.
I think it's a great starting point.
Yeah. The next interview I thought you would find interesting is my chat with Jill Maurer from the Maurer Glass Podcast.
So welcome, Javier. Yeah,
Jill wanted to know more about my process.
So happy to be here.
Here's like part of the interview.
I'm so impressed that you're doing a podcast.
Well, thank you. You know, you had a lot to do with that. Yeah. For the people who don't know about Pretend Radio, tell us what it's about.
I'm an old video director, so I love telling stories. So I was like, I'll make little mini documentaries for podcasts. You know, I decided to do this topic about people pretending to be someone else. I was fascinated by that idea. And it actually started because I developed this fear of speaking in public. Yeah. And I used to do stand-up comedy. And I was like, it got to the point where I was scared to speak to my team. Like the people that I worked with every day. I'm like, why am I nervous talking to like my coworkers? So I needed to get back on stage and like overcome this fear. And the only way I could think about overcoming this fear is pretending to be someone else. And that's where the idea came from.
Wow.
And so I was like, I would love to tell stories about other people pretending to be someone else. And at first I thought it was going to be a podcast about like actors and ghostwriters and stuff. And it slowly turned into this like true crime type podcast about like undercover agents, con artists, you know, like just people living a lie. I try to make the show not a way to glorify people who are taking advantage of other people, but if you listen to my show and you learn something from it so that you won't be a victim, that's like the goal for me, right? Like if there's something that somebody takes away from one of my shows and they won't become a victim, I feel like we won. But the goal is not to glorify these con artists or these liars, you know?
Yeah, I definitely have sort of taken that from some of your podcasts because it just highlights for you that there are really people out there who are intentionally trying to con you. And you don't necessarily even think that of people.
You know what I've noticed? Because I try to take a journalistic angle with all my stories because I am a journalist, but like I study journalism, and so I try to be kind of, you know, neutral, but I can't help sometimes like wonder, how did these people fall for this? You know what I mean? Like, how is that possible? And you know, the more you dig into these stories, you find out that these people, that these victims, they don't even realize they're getting conned because they are so deep in the con. Like once they got you in the con, it's impossible to see what is very obvious to everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, this one story I'm working on now is about this woman who was a millionaire and a con artist. You know, after her husband died, a con artist came in, pretty much conned her out of all her money to the point where she couldn't even pay her light bill. Okay. Wow. And I'm like, how did you not see this coming? Or like, why didn't you say no to this guy? But once you're in that deep into a con, you have no perspective.
So how do you find the people who are the subjects of your podcasts?
That's the number one question I get all the time. And I wish I knew the answer to it because it would make my life a lot easier. There is not one place, right? You know, it's all about keeping, you know, your ear low to the ground. Is that the expression?
Yes.
And I don't like, you know, like saying expressions because I always Ricky Ricardo them. I always mess them up. But, and it, you know, it's all about like reading articles, you know. There are stories that pop up on the AP wire that are fascinating, and they just pop up and then they disappear and nobody ever follows up on them. And so like that's one way. Another way is like, this is silly, but I already know what kind of story I want to cover. So like I knew I wanted to cover a story about a snake oil salesman, you know, because it's just a classic con artist story, right? And so I start out with the concept, and then I go and I start digging and I try to tie the concept to a real story, you know?
Right.
And then I start finding either the victims, or I always try to approach the actual con artists themselves to see if they would tell their side of the stories. And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't.
Yeah. But, So who did you really want to get that just said no?
Oh, man. It's a very long list, but I could tell you my two favorites. This French con artist from the documentary on Netflix called The Imposter, which is, check it out. He pretty much cussed me out on Facebook and told me to take a long walk. But it was awesome. It was like the best rejection ever. Do you remember the former NAACP Spokane, Washington president, Rachel Dolezal? Mm-hmm. She, we've been talking, and I almost had her in season one, and she had a new book, and then she decided not to do it. She didn't like close the door, but she decided not to do
it. Well, so. I hope she does do it. That would be fascinating.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, you win some, you lose some, and right. I've had more wins than losses.
So. Yes, yes. You've had some great ones. So, of the people that you have interviewed so far, or the subjects of your episodes so far, did somebody surprise you, even though you knew their story? Like, was there a surprise to you?
Yeah, I'm literally surprised every time I do an interview, because, you know, I go in knowing a lot about the story. I kind of know where the story is going, and yet I'm always surprised. But one particular interview that kind of surprised me and also surprised the person who I was interviewing, like, was the undercover agent. I interviewed this FBI undercover agent.
That was fascinating.
Yeah, his story was great. And when I put it together, I mean, it fascinated me when I was talking to him. It fascinated me and surprised me when I was editing it. And then after I put it together and put it on the air and he listened to it, it fascinated him. He was like, this is my story. And I'm like shocked, you know, like he said you had me at the edge of my seat. And then that's what I try to do with my show. You know, I try to make it is, I have a news angle to it, but I want to make it entertaining. And so the way I drip information, like, I'm not giving you like a traditional news story. It starts out with the most important information on top.
Right.
Okay. And then they kind of work their way down. I don't take that approach. I want to start the story. Sometimes if it's best to start the story in the middle, you know, just drop the listener in the middle of the action. And they don't know a lot. They just know what's happening. And then I'm slowly painting a picture around that scene. And I like to reveal information. I think that's where the suspense comes in.
They're really beautifully edited. And that one actually was the podcast that had me most on the edge of my seat, because a lot of the people are imposters and they're devious. But that guy his job was to be an imposter. And it was life or death for him to pull it off.
You know, I think we all have secret fantasies about being in the FBI, or, you know, the movies glorify it. But here I am talking to this real undercover FBI agent, and there's one scene in particular that once you listen to it, no one's going to want to sign up for the FBI after that.
No.
You know, he's in this room with this, you know, mafioso type guy, and his goons are right behind him, and it just goes south.
Right.
Right? It goes south really fast.
Right.
And how he got out of that situation alive. I mean, this is not acting. This is like, he's acting for his life.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, this is like real life. And these guys do this all the time. And you know what's amazing about these FBI guys? They play these incredible roles, undercover roles, right? Day or night. And yeah, sure, they're eating fancy restaurants with mob bosses or whatever. But when that's all done, they go back to their hotel room or wherever they are staying, and then they got to do paperwork.
Yeah.
And like, nobody ever talks about that, right?
Right.
They have to like file all those receipts for those fancy dinners.
Right. Call their wife and
yeah,
right.
They're like real people at the end of the hall. It's, to me, that story stands out.
So how did you become the storyteller? How did that happen?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I feel like I've always gravitated to telling stories. Even as a kid, you know, I wanted to be an animator. But I think once I started working in news, that's where it really kicked in, the whole mechanism of telling stories, because it is science. I mean, it's art, but it's also science, the way you tell a story. Mm-hmm. And I learned that there. And I also made some documentaries, and I've produced a lot of commercials and videos for corporations. So the story part has always been part of my profession. And then, but this has been the first opportunity to tell a story the way I want to tell a story, and not, you know, the way my clients want me to tell a story. You know, this is just a hobby. I never started this with the dream of like becoming the next big podcast. Like, seriously, this was a way for me to express myself creatively. And the fact that people like it, that's awesome. But, you know, now that people like it, I secretly fantasize about, you know, doing like a live show in Australia, you know, like, I don't even know what that will look like, but you know, if enough people listen down there, you know,
that's,
why not?
That's exciting. I think it would look like fun.
I try, like, unless people ask me about my podcast, I don't really tell people about it, but like, I feel like I live this double life too, you know?
You started off season one with this story about a cult in Western North Carolina, or they would say a church, I would say a cult. And you kind of left us hanging there. Is there more to that?
There's a lot. I could make the whole podcast about this church. It is the reason why it's interesting. I mean, there are a lot of podcasts out there that cover cults, but this one is different because it's ongoing. It's an ongoing cult. And even as I was reporting on it in season one, there was still stuff happening. And that's why I think it's such an important story to tell, because this church, who, you know, like you said, some people call it a cult, and it actually has every sign of a cult. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has a very authoritative leader who cannot be questioned.
It's difficult to leave.
Yeah, it's difficult to leave. They're not recruiting, and, you know, they could only work at church businesses. But all that, you know, that's not hurting anybody. That's just kind of strange, right? But the reason why this story is important is because there's reports about abuse. Mm-hmm. And in season one, I had... secret recordings of the church leader, the head pastor. Her name is Jane Whaley. It's a woman who was commanding someone to be dropped to the ground and beaten. And I have that on tape. That was the first time anybody heard that recording. It was on my podcast.
It was terrifying.
Yeah, it was very scary. So you're now going from a weird church with weird rules to, you know, people getting abused, kids getting abused.
Crimes.
Okay? Yeah, and it was happening as I released episode 1, 2, and 3 for season one. And right around the time when I was releasing episode 1, 2, and 3, there was a... And I was reporting on it. I kind of alluded about it at the end of season episode 3, but this church has a satellite church in Brazil and in Ghana. And actually, the church in Brazil, like the church in North Carolina, only has 700 members. The church in Brazil has thousands of members.
Oh my.
Okay, so they're going international. So my question was, wait, I want to talk to somebody who goes to the church in Brazil. And it took me a long time, but I finally got an interview with a former member from the Brazilian church. And it was crazy to see how they were able to replicate not only the weird rules and the screaming prayers that they have, but also the abuse happens down there as well.
And what about the person who's talking directly to God? Were they able to replicate that?
Everything. I mean, like, it is a mirror image. Even their main sanctuary, like, is a mirror image of their North Carolina church. They were able to replicate it in a South American country. It's just incredible. And the personal story that I was able to capture was heartbreaking. It was about this man who, a young man who is homosexual, was trying to figure out his sexuality while being in this church. And, you know, he was abused and he finally left the church. But his story is heartbreaking. Mm. But that's worth, that's a story worth telling. So I knew that I needed to tell that story. But also something weird happened as I released these three stories about the church. right as I was on the air, a death occurred. There was a death of somebody who is related to the church, okay? And I couldn't report on it then because it was too fresh. But it's been 6 months, and that death still hasn't been declared a murder or a suicide. And so I'm digging into it too, and that's really interesting. You know, it's not church related, but it is kind of in that same orbit. And so I'm telling that story as well. So there are a lot of stories that are coming out about this church.
Yeah, so your wife married this guy who is in video journalism, does animation, all this fun stuff, and now what?
Yeah, you know, all these crazy stories that I shared with you today, she has to listen to this all the time. And she doesn't see it the way we see it. She's like, why did you get into this? You know, like, why are you like doing this? You know,
you're doing this for fun?
For free? Yeah, I am. I'm doing it for free. And she's super supportive. Yeah. I always call her my executive producer because by the time I finish an episode, I'm so sick of it. And I let her have it. And she'll give me like raw feedback, and she's great. Yeah. She's a good sounding board.
And as a good wife, I'm sure honest feedback.
Honest feedback, and I'm sure she's so tired of me talking about it.
Right, she's going, yes, it's done. Yeah. We can move on to the next subject.
Right. Yeah. And finally, I went down to the outpost in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I traded a beer for a story with my good friends Jeff Moore and Dan Barnes. We recorded in a bar, so there's a bit of background noise.
Welcome to the Live Canary Podcast. I am your host, Jeff Moore, for another week in review, but a little stranger than fiction with some special guests. Daniel.
Jeffrey.
Daniel P. Barnes got it right.
Finally, it's about time. Good Lord.
We're sitting down with Javier from Pretend Radio.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thanks for having me over.
The podcast that does not stop.
It does not stop until it does.
You're on a little break, right?
I'm a little break.
You're collecting
right now,
stories.
You know, I'm just one guy making a, you know, a little 30-minute documentary every week.
You know? There you go. I love it, though. Yeah. I love Pretend Radio. For all of you who don't know, Pretend Radio is a podcast about pretenders.
Yeah, it's basically about people pretending to be someone else. And I actually had no idea what it was going to actually turn out to be. But so I had, you know, this guy that I knew who was a con artist. And I was like, hey, you know, I got this idea for this show.
Nice.
Do you mind if I test it out with you? And he's like, yeah.
That was your cousin, right?
Yeah, it was
my
cousin.
Lives in Miami or
yeah,
in
he's
that area?
In Miami. And so like this guy's been to prison a bunch of times, and actually
that's fantastic.
I didn't know much about his story, so it was mostly me like testing out the format for the show, but really I was learning about him,
your cousin,
in real time. Like when you learned about him, like by listening to the show, that was
real reaction.
Yeah, those are real because
that's
awesome. I knew he was a bad guy. I just didn't realize
he's a bad guy.
He's a bad guy.
He kind of was a bad guy though, right?
A little bit. But you know what's funny about the whole thing is that I think he thought that I was gonna make like Scarface, like, because like why would he agree to this? This is ridiculous.
I don't know.
He hasn't even been sentenced yet for his latest crime,
and he's telling you.
And I'm like, are you sure it's okay to use your real name? And he's like, yeah. Like, are you sure you want to talk about this? And he's like, yeah. This is great. And I was like, okay, but then he didn't talk to me afterwards because
listen to it?
Yeah, I think he listened to it, and he called me up after because this is a part one and part two.
Oh yeah.
And so after part one, he calls me up. He goes, hey, Javi, I don't think you should air part two yet. I haven't been sentenced. Two? And I'm like, wait, why the hell? I mean, I was like, we've known about this for months.
He didn't know your podcast was going to be that big.
I don't think he realized that I wasn't going to glorify him as a criminal.
This is the blend of Pretend Radio meets Stranger Than Fiction, because you couldn't make that up.
It is kind of funny, this new life that I live now. Because...
It is such a strange.
You're surrounding yourself with criminals and
it
pretenders.
Is a very strange.
Are you
life.
Saying your life is
and,
now stranger than fiction?
And
my life is very strange. So let me tell you what happened yesterday. I walk home. Uh-huh. I walk in through the door. I get the mail. You know, like just put the keys down. Regular like that.
Howdy
stuff.
Doody.
Very howdy doody. My wife, you know, she gives me a kiss.
Hey,
she's
hon.
Making apple pie. You know,
you hang the jacket
What's
on the coat rack.
Yeah.
Apple
so
pie. My God.
I get the mail, and in the mail, actually, I have it in the car with me. I get an autopsy report from the medical examiner. Yeah, my life has definitely gotten.
It's not going to be a hobby much longer. I'm going to tell you that.
You don't think so?
No, all it's right. catching legs, and that
so.
Leads me to my first question. You found what works, because you had this premise, right? Pretenders, but I think you said this in the last episode. You're kind of finding your groove, and I really think you found it with those last few.
Oh, thank you.
So. When did it click that you're like, okay, I'm getting listenership, but not only that, but I'm getting good feedback.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the show was, it's kind of been like a work in progress. So people that listen to it are like, wait a minute, you switch topics from episodes to episodes. It's not like true crime. It's not, it could be whatever. Right.
And
that's me just trying to figure out the show. And season one was trying to see what works. And, you know, I've gotten a lot of good feedback, but I'm afraid that like that feedback is shaping the future of the show. You know, like now I feel like I have to do like more of the same. You know,
I think there's a lot of true crime out there, though. And I've got a question later that refers to that. But what I like about yours is you have these other stories about maybe not necessarily crime, but just interweaving like people's lives that are very much fit in with the theme of pretend.
Yeah.
And I think that to me, that really touches me because there's so much true crime, but I think you found a niche in it.
Yeah.
That's really.
I call it diet true crime. You know, like, it's like true crime with like half the calories.
Hey, man, diet's for you. Yeah. Diet's better for you anyway. Yeah. So
it's true crime without the nightmares.
Yeah exactly. Because I did this like serial killer story and I was like, you know, it was very. I did it and I think that I'm very happy with the way it turned out, but like, that's not for me. You know, like, I think. Like, there's plenty of like real true crime serial
killer
podcasts.
Absolutely,
like,
absolutely.
I'm like kind of covering this underworld of like
that's what I like
sneaky people, and actually it could be like
sneaky people.
Yeah, but it could be a positive thing too.
Yeah, so yeah. Like, absolutely. You could be pretending.
Yeah, like the undercover cop, he was pretending to do good.
Right.
You know,
which
like,
was amazing episode by the way.
Okay, that's it. But stay tuned for the new Pretend Radio episode titled "The Jolly Roger Social Club." Coming real soon. Here's a promo. Next time on Pretend Radio, you might remember Sharon McConnell Dickerson from an earlier episode titled The Sculptor.
You know, sculpting is the way I access a lost sense. It is the vehicle through which I access a lost sense, my sight.
When we were recording that episode, she told me a story that, quite frankly, was hard to believe.
Man, it's one of the most traumatic events in my life that I've gone through. And months of worry and research and trying to connect and not being able to access the internet because I'm blind.
It sounded like something out of a movie. And in fact, it should be turned into a movie. It's one of the most sadistic con artist stories I've ever heard.
He had to meet Bo in order to start dealing, weaving that web of deception of pretending to buy his house. So, of course, the two had to have met. So I don't know why I didn't think of that before, Javier. Of course they met. You just gave me an aha moment there.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile Coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next.
You need the team to act on feedback fast. So you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Creative Babble.